Welcome to the podcast that is all about self-employment. We'll be sharing expertise on getting started, getting noticed, and getting it right, as well as dealing with getting it wrong. Your host, Julia Kermode, will help you get ahead so you get the success you deserve.
Welcome to today's podcast. We are looking at strategies for you to find more clients, and I'm really pleased to have with me freelance coach Emma Cossey, and she's going to talk to us about how we can do that. Now, a little bit about Emma. She launched a blog 10 years ago now, in 2011. So I bet that's been a fast 10 years, actually. And her business is all about providing down-to-earth support for freelancers, so people like you listening to this. And one of the things I like that you say on your website, Emma, is working on your own shouldn't mean being alone. And I just think that sums it up really nicely, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I'm a diehard introvert, but I definitely think it's really healthy to have a community and support as a freelancer.
So yeah, you've been in this game for a little while, and I don't know how you started, but I know from talking to friends that people often start kind of freelancing accidentally almost, and sometimes they might inherit clients. I was talking to someone recently, and she was on maternity leave, and anyway, a friend of hers was rejigging what she was doing within her freelance business and basically offered her some clients, and that's how she started. So often it is that kind of random way. But if you haven't got this random way of starting, where on earth do you get started in trying to find your first clients? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I would say the vast majority of freelancers accidentally went freelance. That's from what I've seen. So a lot of us, myself included, I fell into it. I didn't know freelancing was a thing. It was never something that was taught at school or university. And it just happened that I ended up leaving an HR job, joining Twitter. Oh. This was back in 2009, so very old Twitter. Doing a couple of internships in London for editorial roles. And then I landed my first freelance job. I had no idea what it was. Wow. And I was quite fortunate that very early on, someone took me under their wing. So that was really great. And then she introduced me to another client of hers who then took me on. And I think that's how a lot of people start, with referrals. So I think using your current network, whether it's LinkedIn from a job that you had and then you're moving out on your own. So I'll take a step back at you. There's four primary ways I would say you can find clients.
Okay.
So there's social networking. So that's LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Clubhouse now. So that's one area.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. There's loads of new areas, and even Pinterest sometimes can bring in clients and things like that. There's traditional networking. And I find that actually really useful in the early days, to go to local networking events. Obviously, at the moment we're in a lockdown, but there are still some of those going on virtually, and they will come back. And you've got networking as well. There's so many options with networking, speed networking. So there's something for everybody. But that is the second primary area.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's referrals. And that seems to be quite a strong area for people. Where people will refer you or recommend you to other people. What tends to happen is people will get about 2 years into their freelancing career, and the referrals might slightly dry up a little bit, just because that's inevitably what happens. And then they look at the other areas because they go, oh, suddenly I need to find out when. And then pitching is the final one, which isn't always the scary creating a big PowerPoint and going into a massive business. I think that's an idea that a lot of people have, but pitching can be simply just telling people how you can work with them. So I would say those are the four key areas. Social networking, well, referrals tends to be where a lot of people start, or social networking. And then they tend to move into a bit of networking, and then once they've got a bit of confidence, a bit more pitching. But I would say those are kind of the four areas. And one thing I like to encourage people to do is to do one small task in each of those areas each week. And that could be as small as updating your LinkedIn profile, or posting about what you do on LinkedIn, or signing up to a networking event, or following people that you'd love to work with on LinkedIn and getting to know them and interacting with their posts. Yeah. It doesn't have to be big, scary things, but those are all ways that you can build relationships and find clients.
Yeah, I love that. I was talking to someone, she got made redundant, unfortunately, last year, at the end of last year. Now, she's doing what I know a lot of people are doing, looking at what to do, and she wants to set up working for herself. And she said, oh, God, Julia, it's just so much I've got to do. And I said, no, do one little thing. And you've just absolutely validated what I said, you know, just one little thing. And then if you can do one little thing, you can feel like you're making progress, even if it is just a tiny thing, right?
And those things can become habits, you know, and then they don't, you almost don't even think about it. You just think, right, this week I've got to go do four things, spend 10 minutes updating my finances. People talk about working on their business like it has to be this massive intense thing, but actually it can just be little tasks that you can scatter for the week. And some of them you can do, like I sometimes do it on my phone whilst I'm on school run or whilst I'm waiting to pick my son up and things like that. So there's loads of ways you can do it in a really manageable way.
And you've touched on one of my favorite hobby horses there, which is in the finances. Don't leave it all to the last minute. Now, it doesn't matter how many times I tell people not to leave it to the last minute, I found myself doing that recently as well. I'm like, oh my God, I know better. But just doing a little bit at a time. But anyway, we're digressing. That's not going to find you clients necessarily. So do you think most people would or should have a continuous approach to this then? If you're talking about doing little and often, it sounds like that's your view potentially.
It's what I recommend, because the alternative is panic pitching when you lose a client or so one of the great things about being freelance is we spread our risk. We've got several clients we work with. And therefore if one goes, we've still got the others, but we want to refill that gap or a couple of people or one person or whatever. But what people often do is let all that other stuff of finding clients slide away until they really need someone quickly, rather than keeping that pipeline topped up and keeping in people's minds and posting about what they do just being in people's brains basically as that person to speak to, so that when you do need a client, you can say, oh, I've got a space now for April in this. Let me know if you're interested. You've already done the groundwork.
Yeah.
And I think it can feel, I just think it's much more manageable than panicking and feeling that roller coaster of panic excitement.
Yeah, and it must be quite devastating actually if you do lose a client that you've had for a while, and you know, clients needs change, and I guess you must always be wise to that. And it doesn't matter how well you get on with them, if the client doesn't have that need anymore, unfortunately as a freelancer you're out. So you're quite right, rather than panic, it's much better to try and keep awareness there about your services. And I guess social media must be important in that, and having a good online presence. I don't know.
Yeah, interestingly I've had a couple of conversations with people recently who have withdrawn at least partially from social media. One or two of them are just focusing on one social media but not posting lots. They're more focusing on building relationships, so more behind the scenes stuff, which is I guess kind of going back to basics. But for the vast majority of people, I think a social media presence is really good, and finding a social network that works for you as well. I don't believe you have to be on all of them. Like someone who absolutely loves using TikTok is maybe not going to love using LinkedIn, but equally...
Yeah, they're quite different,
But equally, if your ideal clients are more corporate, don't worry about TikTok, go for LinkedIn. You know, find what works for you. And also, keep an eye on what works and what doesn't, because if you find you are putting a lot of energy into posting on a social network because you feel like you should, but you're getting nothing back, switch that focus, do something else, because it's...
Yeah.
You know, your time is so valuable as a freelancer or a self-employed person.
Yeah, that's really brave, isn't it? Because we do feel like we've got to cover everything. And I sort of laughed when you mentioned Clubhouse earlier, because I'm trying to get to grips with that and it's a bit of an uphill battle. But anyway, if I find out what the secret is, I'll let you know. But yeah, if it doesn't work, then I'm not going to spend my time on there. It's as simple as that. But that's really hard because you feel like you're missing out. We all have this fear of missing out, don't we?
Yeah, it's so hard. And I think... even like I got FOMO this week returning to full-time freelancing from doing homeschooling and everything else, and I already had that FOMO, and I was like, oh, I should have been spending more time on Clubhouse, or I should have been I haven't touched LinkedIn properly for weeks. And you know, you do get that fear of missing out, but there's always time and there's always an opportunity to create kind of content that will really work with your clients and potential customers. Yeah. But I think the other thing is it does help to have something consistently. Like my newsletter goes out every week without fail, partly because I've got a VA who makes sure I do it. And I need that accountability. So I think having one thing that is always consistent is really important.
Yeah, yeah. And actually that's quite tough. And I do want to talk to you about your podcast a bit later, but obviously we're both podcasters, and I set mine up at the end of last year. And even over Christmas, even though I knew I wouldn't have necessarily big numbers of people expecting this podcast on a weekly basis, I still put it there because I just thought, no, that's the one thing I feel I have to do. And one of the things you said, which I didn't know what it was, is networking. So I guess that's getting together in a network and going for a walk, I guess. But tell me about that. I've not heard of that before.
Yeah, so networking, the first time I heard of it was there is a lady in Bristol called Freelance Mum.
Okay.
And she does events, but she started out, I think, with networking events. So it was primarily aimed at primarily mums, but parents with children, young children, and they could all go and network, but whilst getting some exercise in or just having a nice time walking.
Fantastic.
And there's now actually networking events all across the UK. So if you just search for networking in your area, you'll find one.
Yeah.
I've got a coaching friend actually who does a lot of coaching whilst walking. And there's a lot of benefits of talking whilst walking. You just tend to be a bit more free with what you say and a bit more relaxed, and it's not quite so intense being face to face. So if you are a bit shyer or more introverted, it's brilliant. And also there's loads of stuff around. So if there's an awkward silence, it's not awkward because you're looking around what's happening near you. And obviously it's a bit more lockdown friendly at the moment. I think that just starting to all come back in now, but it's a really, really good way of dipping your toe into networking, I would say.
Yeah, I love that. I've never heard of it. So so as soon as we finish, I'm going to get onto Google and see it, because, you know, it being in a different environment, it just frees your mind a little bit, doesn't it? So I can well see that would be helpful. Have you noticed any other kind of networking changes with the pandemic? I'm guessing lots of online. I mean, everything I do is online at the moment. I guess you must be the same. What have you noticed?
Yeah, so I've noticed a lot of the local networking events I used to go to occasionally, they've all switched to Zoom ones. So they've all kind of made that. They've converted. It'll be interesting to see how many will also maybe carry on doing a virtual one while still having in-person ones, because I think there's a lot of benefits for virtual ones. I think just generally, actually, there's a lot of benefits for Zoom meetings for freelancers. It saves so much time instead of meeting up. And it's great to meet up, but sometimes it's, it can take a while to do it. I think it'd be interesting to see how many networking events continue online. I think Clubhouse came at a good time because that sort of allows some networking, but it's not quite so pushy. I'm very intrigued how it will change things. I wonder if people will move towards longer networking events or shorter networking events in the future, because if they see the benefits of like an hour and a half networking virtual event, then that might make them want to do shorter events when it comes back to doing traditional ones.
Yeah, I'm not sure how it's going to go either. So, I mean, I'm in Cheshire, and I always used to find that a lot of stuff I wanted to go to was in London or whatever. So that for me is probably about two and a half hour train journey, then to go to a 1 hour event and then 2.5 back. It's just not necessarily feasible. So I've loved all the online thing, but I have missed that face-to-face interaction as well. So yeah, I think I'm quite flexible. I don't have a strong view as to how I think it should go, and I guess we'll just see. We'll all just see what happens when we kind of get back out there.
I think it's a really interesting one, because I've actually got some great friends now who I made locally through networking, and obviously we have in common that we own our own businesses, and it is a very specific life experience, I think, to run your own business.
Yeah.
And therefore, I think it's quite natural that you would make friends with people who maybe share that kind of experience. And I don't know if we would have... Well, a lot of those friendships started actually on social and then moved to networking, but that really solidified the friendship. So... it's going to be a fascinating year ahead, I think.
Yeah, and we're very much assuming, or at least I'm very much feeling positive that we will be back out there this year. I'm not interested in hearing any other view other than we will be back out there this year. So, one of the things, of course, that's really difficult is kind of, so we've talked quite a bit about networking and how that's important, and this whole kind of juggling finding new clients alongside doing your day-to-day work is really difficult, isn't it? And you know, we just mentioned actually doing small things regularly. Are there any other insights that you can share about how to be successful in managing your client pipeline? Gosh, that sounds grand, doesn't it? But yeah, give us some down-to-earth honesty, Emma.
So there are certain things that could help. Like, for example, I use Dubsado, which is an online tool where you can book in like meetings and invoice, and there's to-do lists. It's all automated, but you can automate in there a reminder to yourself to check in with clients, or they'll even have like a template so that you can automatically send it, or you can approve it. So that helps with keeping in touch with old clients. One thing that is quite useful to keep in touch also with old clients is having a exclusive newsletter, maybe just monthly, for new and current clients, current and past clients. It keeps you in the loop, and also you can be, so for example, for your social media manager, you might say in it, cool, go back to Clubhouse again. Here are 5 ways you could use Clubhouse for your business. If you like help implementing these, get in contact and we can book in a session. So it's a really nice way of giving them value, but still promoting what you're doing and hopefully bringing them back on board. Because warm leads are so much easier.
I guess reminding them of your existence so they can go, oh, I remember Emma. She helped me do this. And, you know, and it, even if they don't pick up the phone straight away, if you're there reminding them of your existence, then you're going to be at the forefront of their mind, hopefully.
Yeah, exactly. And there's 2 other things I do to make sure that I stay on track with doing regular things. So I've just recently moved to Notion, and I love it. I'm obsessed with it. but I have a Notion board where I have a list of all of the tasks that I can do that week, and then I just choose one from each section: the social networking, normal networking, referrals, and pitching, and I just move it into my calendar. So those tasks are all 5-10 minutes long, so I just schedule them into my calendar so I know I've got that time blocked out.
Okay.
So that's the thing. And then the third thing is a scary email, which is kind of the, if you do have a panic on about finding new work, and actually it's really good for new freelancers or people launching something new. It is an email, and I do have a template on my website, that you send to friends and family who you think will be supportive. And just to let you know, I'm launching this. I'd really appreciate any support you might have, or anyone you might know who would be interested. Here are the details. You could always offer them an exclusive discount if you want to, or some kind of referral bonus, like an Amazon voucher or something. And that email is so successful. Whenever it goes out, whenever anyone in my group says that they've sent it, they usually get at least like 30% of people coming back saying, oh, that's amazing and really supportive. And then usually a few leads off the back of it as well, of people referring people. Okay. And I think the key message on that is, don't assume people know what you do, because they don't.
Yeah, that's so true.
I sent out my, I posted years ago, actually, on my Facebook, tell me what you think I do. And I had some old school friends who thought I was a nurse, who thought I was all sorts of things. And I was like, I'm not doing very good at promoting a job of promoting what I do. So if you send an email telling those friends and family exactly what it is you do, they want to help you because they love you. So
yeah. Yeah, I love that. And how flattering for someone to think you're a nurse. I mean, that's so nice. But yeah, that whole friends and family thing. And sometimes that feels awkward, doesn't it? Which is, I guess, why you called it, I think you called it that scary email, I think was how you described it. But yeah, you almost have to shut your eyes and click send, I guess. Then it's out there, it's done. So we've talked about a few different ways of finding clients. So what about, like you said at the start, pitching, and how that doesn't have to be scary. Now, to me, I'm thinking of pitching, I'm thinking of Dragon's Den or The Apprentice and all of that really, oh, awful. Well, maybe it's not awful if you like that sort of thing, but for me, I don't think I would thrive in that environment. So talk us through pitching in a more... how you see it. I didn't want to use a word to describe it in case I got it wrong. So how do you see pitching?
Yeah, so as I mentioned at the start, I'm definitely an introvert and I really don't like pushy sales. So the methods I use are nothing like that. They are ones that people can use comfortably, and it is genuinely about relationship building. So for example, one way of pitching could be finding the five people that are likely to hire you in ideal organisations that you want to work with. You might go follow them on LinkedIn and then you'll get to know them. So you'll comment on their posts and you'll share things that might be useful, but you're not sitting there really having like hard pitching.
Yeah.
After a while, you might see their post something and then you think, oh, this might be relevant. So you might message them and say, just to let you know, if you're interested, I do offer that as a service. So that's one gentle way of doing it. But that is a bit more authentic because you're genuinely interested in what they do, because they're the kind of people that you love working with.
And they ought to know that as well, because they will have seen you liking and commenting on their posts, whether it's LinkedIn or elsewhere. Yeah. So, yeah, sorry, I interrupted.
No, that's fine. So there's that kind of option. There is the more traditional options where you have a look around your local area and see if there are businesses that you think you could help. And you can always go around. It's a bit more tricky during COVID times, but... like in the past, people have gone around and dropped off little goodie bags with information about what they do, or like a tea bag with a note on the side saying, why not read this whilst having a cup of tea or a chocolate bar.
Nice.
Personal.
Yeah.
So you can kind of do that kind of traditional way of doing it. There is an element of pitching when you're networking. But again, I just find generally, like with networking, don't go in with an elevator pitch in mind, because that's scary and you'll trip up. And what's much better is to ask lots of questions, really get to know someone else's business. And if they're a good fit, you will find that there is a natural moment for you to say, oh, that's actually something I can help you with. And that feels much more natural than going like just elevator pitching at somebody and then just overwhelmed and they just feel a bit icky about it. Whereas if it sounds collaborative, that is much more comfortable.
Yeah, that's so true, isn't it? And just thinking about my own experience from the last year or so, as with COVID, so much has moved online, and actually that type of elevator pitch online just won't work in my view anyway. So it was quite funny actually. Perhaps I shouldn't admit this on the podcast, but I was slightly worried about approaching you because I thought you would see us as competitors, and I genuinely wanted to collaborate. And I thought, well, you know, I think your market's slightly different to mine, and actually if we can work together, together. I think that that's best for our listeners. And so yeah, I was quite nervous when I wrote it.
But like you say, it's not like you say that it's slightly different audiences, and I think even so, I'm a coach, and there are millions of coaches out there now. But everybody works in different ways. Everybody comes from a different background. Everybody has different experiences. Mm. So every coach has something different. And the same with you and I. We have a similar audiences, but we will approach it in different ways, and we'll cater to different things, and we'll have different resources we share. So, I mean, I have found actually in the freelance industry, everyone's really supportive of each other, and there isn't a lot of rivalry.
Yeah, that is really, really true, actually.
And I think there's still, even now, I mean, I've been freelance since 2009, and when I send any kind of pitch, even if it's just a light Instagram message, I still hide under the desk. Not literally, but mentally hide under the desk. I'm like, oh, God, what is
this? I'm glad you said that, because I feel that all the time.
I think it is natural to... Because freelancing can feel really personal, I think it is natural sometimes to do that. But like you say, people either just don't reply, or they need a nudge, or they're really nice when they come back and say no.
When you're starting off, you know you've got to network and get out there. So actually, that feels much nicer, a much nicer use of your time than, oh, I've got to get some sales in.
And actually, I think now we are very fortunate to be in time where we have all these options in terms of opt-ins and freebies and things like that. So that what you can do is have an opt-in. So for example, I've got a couple of opt-ins. I've got like a quiz to find out freelance personality, but also 5 ways to find a new client. And that training does really well, because if I can follow up with someone and say, I just thought this might be useful, it's just a free training on 5 ways to find a new client, it brings them on your mailing list. And then you can always upsell into something else on that mailing list.
Yeah.
And I have like a welcome sequence that gently warms people up. And if they buy, that's great. It's not the whole purpose of them. That my purpose is to give people that community and that support. But there's also links in there if they do want to take it further, if they do want to invest more. So as freelancers, I think it actually is really important to have a mailing list and an opt-in that allows you to give someone value without it feeling like you're asking for money straight away, which can feel a bit icky. So
yeah,
to be able to message them and say, I've saw your post about this, I thought this might be useful, that gives them automatic value, and they already are liking what you're saying, and then they're on the list.
Yeah, and actually that whole thing about giving value is something that some of us struggle with, and I've certainly spoken to people who are like, well, I can't give away all my trade secrets, and I guess you have to get the balance right when you're doing that. What are your thoughts around that?
Yeah, I think you can give people a taster of all your trade secrets, I guess.
But I think
the more people love what you do because you're sharing great value with them, the more they will want to get to know and learn from you, and then the more they want to work with you. So I am quite pro sharing lots of information. I think there's a difference as well between sharing information with a group of people and then someone individually brain picking. I think that's where the kind of the line crosses. And I think if you've got someone that is brain picking for an hour and a half of your time,
that's not
awesome. Yeah, when you could be doing like a Facebook Live for half an hour in your group, sharing similar content, but for more people who are more likely to then work with you than someone that will pick your brains for an hour and a half and never hire you, because brain pickers never hire.
Yeah, actually, so I was about to say, the more stuff you share, the more people will get to know what it is you're offering. And, you know, you can never share you. And actually, so often with the freelance world, you are your unique selling point. So you have to entice people to want to work with you. But now you've just struck on another point. That whole brain picking thing, that must happen so much. any top tips for getting rid of those people in a nice way? Because, of course, you don't want to alienate them. But actually, you said they never buy anyway. So maybe you do want to alienate them. What's your top tip?
My favourite phrase is people who pay attention. So if people invest in things, they will spend more time focusing on it. That said, those people are actually a blessing because they give you the opportunity to create resources that you can then be sharing with a larger audience, and then more, and it's likely that it's a problem a lot of people are facing. So you could then either create a free resource or a mini course, like a paid course or a paid training or webinar. So it's an opportunity they're giving you, really. And as time goes on, if you listen to those early ones and create the resources, you can then point them towards those resources. One of my earliest courses was the 30 Days to Go Freelance course. And that was because I was getting a lot of questions about the basic first steps. And if I pointed them towards that they could go find that information themselves, basically.
Yeah, they could help themselves. Yeah.
So use it as an opportunity, basically.
Okay. Yeah. And I guess if we have a brain picker that we don't like for whatever reason, maybe whatever, then I guess it's our business. We can just remove them or whatever. I mean, gosh, it sounds a bit harsh. I don't want to be negative, actually. But I guess that it's up to us what we do, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And I think you can always send them to someone else's resource, like the government resources or whatever.
I love that.
Or I find those kind of people quite often, if you say, I'd love to be able to help you, here's the link to be able to book in a call. It's however much it is. Yes. So you can offer
power. Start talking to them about money. Then they'll soon go.
Yeah, you'll suddenly get ghosts. I mean, some people are absolutely fine then, and they'll be like, oh, yeah, no, I'd love to book in a call. But power hours are brilliant for that because you can just offer that time at a relatively affordable price, and they'll be able to do that. Or you save it and you say, oh, that's great, I'll do that as a Facebook Live in my Facebook group and answer the question, but be able to answer other people's questions as well. So again, it's kind of about bringing it into a useful resource for you to offer.
That is such a good way of doing it, actually, because then you're bringing value not just to them but to your wider community, which is brilliant, actually. And I guess that's half the trouble with trying to get new clients, is you don't want to spend time on something which is not necessarily as profitable as other activities, and it's balancing that, isn't it?
That's really hard to balance. And I struggle with that balance. Like, I don't sit there and specifically split up my week in terms of what's going to be creating content that's free and what's... That said, I do have an approach where I have a theme for each week, which helps, because I create, say, one piece of content, like my podcast. You can then take the text from that and turn that into social media posts, and then that could be the content of your newsletter. So there are ways of making the most of that time. But I am still definitely, I can fall down a Instagram stories hole very easily and spend a lot of time on there. And Clubhouse, I haven't been on there actually recently, but I was spending a lot of time on Clubhouse. And yeah, it's that FOMO again, isn't it? That you feel like you want to be doing lots of it, but if it's not bringing in the money, you need to be regularly assessing what's working, what's not.
Yes, yeah. And you mentioned it there. Let's talk about your podcast, because I've listened to a few of your podcasts, and they're brilliant. And one of the things I love about them is that they're so short and snappy, whereas, you know, your more traditional podcasts like this one is generally a bit longer, and you know, you would listen to it wherever. But yours is the tea break, isn't it? So and I think that's such a clever concept.
Thank you. It's actually about 8 years old, but it's been very inconsistent over the years.
You're kidding. It can't be 8 years old.
Well, I think it's about 7 or 8 years old. I got into listening to podcasts when I was at university, and I'm nearly 36 now. So I
don't add it up.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that. I have always loved podcasting. I'm very much an audio learner. But for me, I wanted something And I think this is a general theme across my business. I want something short, to the point and practical, because I want people to be able to implement what I'm sharing straight away. I don't want it to be overwhelming.
Yeah, and it's perfect. And your listeners obviously thrive off that as well, because that's one of the things is you can spend hours looking into Clubhouse, for example, let's say, because we've mentioned it a few times. You can spend hours looking at it, but actually all you need is just someone to go, this is what you do, this is how you do it, and Bob's your uncle, you know, and that would be much easier. We all go down these rabbit holes, don't we? Far too easily. Well, time has flown by. Oh, yeah. Do you have a final couple of top tips on anything related to getting new clients?
I mean, I guess the overall thing for me is just choose even like two or three tasks a week to stay consistent. Each week to work on your business. And they really can be tiny. They can be a post on LinkedIn, or even updating your pin posts on Instagram and Twitter, and not Instagram, Facebook and Twitter, or just reaching out to a new networking event, that kind of thing. It can be really small, just booking it. But I just want people to get into the habit of doing it regularly, so it's not overwhelming. It's just a 5-minute task they can tick off their list, and they know they've done something to work towards their business growing. And I think working out what works for you as well. So I've got a long list of tasks that people can choose from, but those tasks won't work for everybody. So it's just finding the things that really work for you and really feel comfortable, but don't get bogged down with the terminology that, like, pitching sounds terrifying. As we mentioned earlier, lead sounds terrifying. It's just relationship building. It's just getting to know people that either might want to work with you, or that you'll learn from, or just getting to know, like, other people. That's quite a nice thing to do, really.
Yes, yeah, it is. And that's a really lovely way to finish off with. So massive thank you for joining us today. And just for our listeners, we're really lucky to have Emma with us, because she's just moved house and has had a very chaotic time. So I really appreciate you fitting it in. And it just is testament to how important this world is to us, that kind of we still wanted to have this chat at a busy time. So thanks so much for joining us.
I really appreciate coming on. Thank you. I'm just glad that the Wi-Fi has managed to stay constant
throughout. Thank you for listening to All About Self-Employment, hosted by Julia Kermode. For more information on today's discussion, please visit iwork.co.uk, where you can also join our growing community. We hope you enjoyed today's episode, and if you did, then we would love you to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. We'll be back at the same time next week.